Welcome to Human School. I'm your host, Dr. Patil Armenian. After 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, 4 years of residency, and 2 years of fellowship, I thought I was done. I did my time, got my degrees, and now I was just gonna live life. Well, think again. Some of my greatest schooling has come after my formal education was complete, and it keeps on coming. Join me at Human School, where we can learn together. I'm an emergency physician and medical toxicologist working at a large teaching hospital in California. I'm also a mom, wife, sister, daughter, and friend. Whether you work in healthcare or not, you too lead a busy life. Together, let's work on how we can thrive in all of our real-world roles. On this podcast, we'll dig deep into what it means to constantly learn and evolve to be human. Every other week, I'll share some of my personal stories, interview inspiring people, and offer tools to help you learn more about yourself. Being on the front lines in the ER, you learn a lot about life and death. And though my philosophies were born in a busy emergency room, they can apply to anyone trying to live a joyful life here on Earth. Please listen, share, and subscribe to this podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow me on Instagram at Human School Podcast, and feel free to let me know what topics or guests you want to hear about. And if you like the podcast, don't forget to rate and review it. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Human School. I took a break from the podcast for about a month because, you know, life happens. I had to take care of my husband and my kid who were sick last month. It's been a rough winter. I feel like every single kid has had every virus known to man nonstop. Yeah, I just needed to take a break and take care of them and also think about the podcast a little bit more and think about what I want to say and who I want to interview. I've had this growing feeling of where am I going with this? And I would love ideas on if there's people you guys want me to interview or topics you want me to talk about. Maybe we'll do a Q&A episode next. But today I finally felt that I had the space to actually come back to the podcast because I had an idea of what I wanted to talk about. It's an idea I've been thinking about for a little over a month, which is mentoring. I'm recording this on March 4, 2024, which very coincidentally happens to be the one-year anniversary of the death of one of my dear mentors, Dr. Jean Carlson. In the first episode of this podcast, which is now almost 1 year ago, I talked about another mentor of mine that had recently passed away at that time, Dr. Lori Weichenthal. That's episode 1, if you'd like to take a listen. And Lori and Jean were very close, actually, with Jean initially mentoring Lori and then becoming her peer and good friend. And I've been thinking about them a lot just because it's the 1 year anniversary, but also because when they left, it feels like it left a big gap in kind of my work family. Sometimes we think our lineage is just who we're related to by blood, like my parents and grandparents and then kids. But that type of lineage is just one part of the story that really makes us who we are. When I think about my mentors and people who've helped me along the way, it starts feeling really powerful. And then when you add in the layer of realizing that I'm now the mentor for others, it becomes even more important to think about. And I really feel with the passing of Lori and Jean, I lost these really big mentors in my life. And it's almost like they were saying, okay, well, now it's your turn. You have to do to others what we did for you. So I've really been thinking about that a lot. Now, as some of you know, if you've listened to the podcast before, if you know me, that I am in the field of medical education. I mean, I teach emergency medicine, I teach toxicology, I teach medical students and residents how to be doctors, basically, in the specialties that I specialize in. And, you know, I think every field of work is like that, where there's this big educational component. Mine just happens to be more education on paper. But looking back, some of my mentors haven't even been in my field, haven't even been in medical education. Some of my interactions have been minimal, where someone helped me with a specific project or just a specific concept, to really extensive, where we've talked and met hundreds of times. And what I'm trying to get at is that one person doesn't have to be the person that you look up to for everything. One person doesn't have to be your mentor for everything. Humans are too multifaceted for that. We have way too many parts of ourselves. We have too many interests, too many things we want to do. So I would recommend getting away from the notion of thinking that, you know, one person is the person you should emulate or be like. Rather, think of all the people that have little bits of themselves that you really love or look up to, want to either be like or want to understand how they do something. And so there's multiple people that you can draw on. I do want to talk about Gene Carlson for a little bit, because he's the epitome of not needing to have many words to be a great mentor. You know, I never had constant meetings with him or anything formal, but it was not only our interactions, but also the landscape that he set for everyone else. Now, Gene was basically my boss for many years. He was the chair of our emergency department for a very long time. And he really kind of set the foundation for the culture of even what our department is today. And, you know, I work in a really crazy ER. It's very difficult. We can get into the difficulties in other episodes. But what people come back to time and time again is, who are you working with? What is the vibe of the place? We're a very hardworking group. We're also a very supportive group. And we like to try to have a good time doing what we do while also being serious, obviously, because our job is very serious. And we care a lot about wellness and for people to actually be well when they're doing this. And when I think back, Gene was really the person that laid the foundation for the culture of our department. I talked a lot in the first episode of this podcast about how much Lori did for us regarding wellness and introducing wellness concepts. But Gene was that backbone that held her up and supported all of her novel ideas. I remember being a baby intern and hearing about how our venerable chair, Gene, had taken time off to be with his wife when she was sick. I think just based on what I'd been exposed to so far in my life, I just didn't know that a man could do that, be like in the highest level job and say, okay, I'm going to take a step back for a little bit to help out my wife. I just remember thinking that was the most beautiful thing. And that was the most amazing thing. And that was one of the things that just really made him untouchable in my eyes, because he knew when to take time for his family and those he loved. He let the rest of us know through not only that, but so many different ways, that your family does come first, your personal life is important. And that put a huge imprint on my impressionable young mind. You could take time off to do the things you loved, be with the people you loved, take care of your family. He opened his home every year for this giant holiday party that his amazing wife, Pam, planned. And it was a big deal. I remember when my kid was a newborn, I bought him a special outfit to go to his first Carlson home holiday party. And it was the whole thing, like, oh, we're going to go to the Carlson's house. You need a special outfit. And so it was just that whole feeling. Another story I remember is when one of our fellow ER doctors was pregnant with her second child. And she was a very new junior faculty. She always says how she was really nervous to tell Gene the news, because at that time, she was the only female faculty with children, and she felt that she would be viewed as a burden. This was a while ago. Now the landscape has changed so much where there's actually so many women in our department, and so many of them are moms or are going to be. But back then, she was the only female faculty who had ever been pregnant, actually. And so she set up a meeting with Gene, and she was really nervous telling him the news. But not only was Gene actually genuinely excited for her, but just told her, figure out how much time you need, and he'd advocate for her, and he would figure it all out, and that he supported her. It was just the most kind and supportive environment. Let me tell you, that was not the case in a lot of medicine, in a lot of academic medicine departments. I'm not here to tell you the horror stories, but here is a good story. The following week, Jean actually put an article in her mailbox. It was an editorial from JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association. He put it in her box, and the whole article was about the value of working moms. Jean had written a note on the article telling her that he supported her as a working mom, and my friend actually still has that note. Another lesson that I really took away from Jean was that if you're going to complain in a big meeting, also have a proposed solution. I really like that. I mean, sometimes it's good to complain. We all need to vent, let things out. But even if he didn't like the solution, he wanted to hear the solution. And he had this 50-50 rule in meetings, which was that, you know, you can kind of gripe about things 50% of the time and then actually accomplish agenda items 50% of the time, then it's a good meeting. You can't be all business, and then you can't be all stories and complaining. So you just got to find that balance. What he showed us was the balance between your work life and your personal life, the balance in just conducting business. He was so fair and made everybody feel like they were heard and respected. Even when I was a very junior faculty and a resident, I remember feeling that respect. When I was a resident, I was thinking about going into toxicology, but I just had no idea what that meant, what the job prospects were. I just knew nothing. All I knew was that I really enjoyed thinking about the care of poisoned patients. And I remember one day Gene pulled me aside and he said, look, I think it's a really good idea for you to do toxicology. And I just want you to know that if you go and do toxicology and you want to come back, I will have a job for you. That was such an amazing peace of mind. I just knew that, okay, like I will have a place. And sure enough, actually, the year that I was applying for faculty jobs, this was when I was a second year toxicology fellow. So I was applying for faculty jobs. And at that time, the landscape in California in academic emergency medicine was that toxicology was very much seen as a hobby. I got so many job offers from different places that said, you know, we'll definitely hire you to be one of our ER doctors, but we don't know what to do with this whole toxicology thing. It's a cute hobby. We're not going to pay you for it. And it was just like this non-starter. Now, Gene, we weren't even technically hiring that year, but he really kind of kept his promise to me. I remember when we were talking, he said, look, I don't know what to do with this whole toxicology thing, but if you come here, I'll help you figure it out. That was all I needed. And Gene was one of those people that if he said, I'm going to figure it out with you, you knew that he was. It's like his word was everything. And so I said, okay, everywhere else is saying this is a hobby. At least I have someone here who is saying, I understand it's a job and not just a hobby. It's its own medical specialty, and we're going to figure it out. And when I started as faculty, that was one of the things that I feel like from day one, we started working on, and with Gene, and then later with our chair after that, Greg Hendy, we made a whole toxicology service. And now we are a consultation service like anybody else in the hospital. We're on call 24/7, 365. People transfer patients to us for higher level of care. It's really great. And Gene was the one who, again, laid the groundwork for that. I mean, I could just go on and on. I have so many Gene stories. The last one I'll say is just to give you an impression of what a great doer and mentor he was. This is when I was already a few years into being faculty and more of our docs started having kids. And so I would hear their breast pumping horror stories. So they would either pump in their cars, in our ambulance bay, or in the ER bathrooms, which PS are like not great. I mean, you could just imagine the bathrooms in a busy ER. It just all sounded really awful to me. And again, please remember this is like over a decade ago. Now, at a meeting, I brought up the issue. And if you know me, you know that sometimes I can get a little dramatic in meetings. And so I ended my pitch for a dedicated pumping room for the ER staff with, "Would you want Pam pumping milk in our gross ER bathrooms?" Pam being Gene's wife. And he was horrified. And Gene said, "No, of course not. I'll take care of this." And really what it was is that no one had brought up the issue before. But as soon as he knew about it, he solved it. Literally the next day, there was already a space that was dedicated. And then he worked on building a dedicated pumping room in the building with options in the ED admin offices closer to the department. And I'm pretty sure that the office that we started using was actually his office that he gave up for the cause. I mean, just amazing, right? This is also why representation matters. So in those high-level meetings, it was always men. I was one of the first women that was in those meetings and then introducing these topics along with Lori. So it wasn't that they were actively trying to not make things easy for working mom doctors in the ER. It was that literally nobody had done it before. So they just didn't know what the needs were. And as soon as he knew, he fixed it. And that was the thing. He would just do things without fanfare, no ego or arrogance. And in medicine, there's a lot of egos, a lot of policies, a lot of rules. And he just never seemed to be fazed by those rules. So especially today, you know, I'm thinking about him a lot and really just thinking about how it's really important to understand the tone that people set around you. And he really set that tone and always made my ideas feel welcome and that I was supported. I'm so lucky to have had a mentor like that. Now, mentors can be your elders. Like, I've really talked about my elders so far. I've been so excited to interview some of them on this podcast, but they can also be your peers. Think about all of your friends that you vent to about work, for example, and then they give you some advice back. That's mentorship. And peer mentorship is as valuable as that kind of top-down mentorship. Really, we need opinions and help from all sources. One of the strange things that I loved about being an ER doctor is that my job didn't stop during COVID. When everybody was on lockdowns and they were quarantining, I wasn't. I was still going to work. I felt so lucky that I got to go to work, actually, and see all of my friends, all the nurses and techs and doctors and people from other departments. We had phases where before it got really bad, where it was actually really slow. People weren't really coming to the ER. And so we were always talking to each other, asking each other's opinions. Even now, that's one of the hallmarks of what I love about the ER that I work in, is that I'm constantly working with all of my peer mentors. Sometimes I think the residents think that the faculty, we talk to each other too much. But what it is that we love talking to each other, and we're always exchanging information about cases, getting each other's opinions, processing things. It really makes it into this, you know, I think even despite the chaos, into a great working atmosphere. So think about your mentors. Who are they? What aspects of your life have they helped with? I've had mentors that, for example, have helped me with the nitty-gritty at work. Some that I've helped with grander concepts in, let's say, research, or grander concepts about how I view the world at large, or even bigger, just giving me the sense that I can accomplish whatever I want to because this other person sees that in me. For example, I remember being in college, I worked at the Daily Bruin, which was the newspaper, student newspaper at UCLA. I was a photographer, and I never thought that I could be the photo editor. I just looked at those guys as something superhuman, way better than me, the best photographers, amazing editors. And I didn't think that I was in that class, especially because I was so new to photography. When it came time for the applications, three of the guys who were the photo editors above me kind of pulled me aside and said, "You're going to apply for photo editor, right?" And I was like, "No, what are you guys talking about?" And they were like, "Well, what are you talking about? You're obviously next in line and you have the potential." Until they told me, I literally didn't even think that I could be the photo editor. It hadn't even crossed my mind. But because they said it, I actually started seeing it, and then I applied, and then I became the photo editor. And it was really the best experience of my entire education at UCLA to be able to do that. I mean, that's the thing. Sometimes your mentors just pull you aside and tell you one thing once that makes a big difference in your life. So think about that. Just really think, what aspects of your life have they helped with? And now let's kind of like flip it and think, so who are you mentoring? I remember being a resident and thinking, I don't think I've learned anything yet. I was my second year. I was like, I don't think I know anything. I just felt so lost all the time. And then one day there was somebody from another service that needed to put in a chest tube, which is a procedure that we do to reinflate the lungs when the lungs drop. I taught him how to do it. And then I walked away thinking, wait a minute, I know how to do something and I can teach it to someone else. It was the first time that I thought, oh, wow, I did learn something in the last year and a half. It could be these little things too. So who are you guiding? Who are you giving advice to? Who are you helping out at work or in school or in life? You have to pay it forward because you yourself have been guided and mentored. And so now it's up to you to, you know, keep getting that, but also keep paying it forward. We talk a lot about burnout. I've talked a lot about burnout. And something I really discovered just in this year that I think is a great antidote to burnout is in engaging with students, those fresher on the path than you, engaging with anybody that you yourself can mentor. I'm finding this relationship to be as beneficial for them as it is for me. Sometimes maybe more beneficial for me. I'm learning a lot and I'm feeling more rejuvenated the more I try to talk to others that want any bit of advice from me. And so I just think of the people who've guided and taught me, those who I'm guiding and teaching in return, who will they teach? You know, humans need community. We're tribal beings. And community doesn't just mean your blood relatives, your like family that you're genetically related to. Community is more. It's everyone else around you. So look around. Who inspires you? Who do you want to inspire and guide in return? These relationships are so important and so important to foster. The more we think about the tidbits we've learned from others and then what we want to pass on to someone else, the more that's also going to keep us engaged in our community of whatever work it is that we're doing or whatever we're doing in our lives, because we need that sense of being, that sense of togetherness, that really drives us forward and really keeps us, I think, happier in our everyday lives. So I think I've given you some stuff to chew on. Think about it. If you think of any comments, please feel free to message me. Also, if you have anything else you want me to discuss, please let me know. Thanks for listening. Please like, subscribe, share, and download the podcast. And again, you can find us at Human School Podcast on Instagram. I'd like to thank Dr. Zac Efron for the theme music. And I'd just like to make a general disclaimer that any of the institutions I work for, including Community Regional Medical Center, UCSF, UCSF Fresno, and American Ambulance, have nothing to do with any of my thoughts or opinions. And so we'll kindly leave them out of this. Thanks, everyone. See you next time.